Starting up, kind of the story in that part of the world, which is revolving around Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, and the Philippines, kind of starts with an instruction that Srila Prabhupada gave to Tamala Krishna Goswami in 1976. And at that time, he asked him to try to spread Krishna consciousness in China. And at the time, of course, this was still part of the Cultural Revolution. It was under Chairman Mao, so it was very much under communist rule. And things were pretty much closed. So although he made an attempt and made many arrangements, he was not able to go at that time. And when Prabhupada saw it was so difficult, he told him not to try. He said there may be better opportunities in the future. So later on, the opportunities came, and it kind of started around 1980. And at that point, there was just a rented apartment in Hong Kong, very small, probably not too much bigger than this, a little bit bigger, not too much bigger than this temple room and perhaps the rest here. And there was just one or two devotees at the time. There were no local devotees. After a short time, we started some other preaching activities, specifically through a type of yoga program, which was kind of geared towards, well, appealing to people who perhaps didn't have a lot of interest in religion, but had a little bit of interest in at least yoga asanas and perhaps mantra chanting and maybe a little philosophy. So we started with that. And after many hundreds and hundreds of persons running through this program, some of those persons became the first devotees, Hong Kong devotees, Chinese devotees. And then after that, everything started to evolve, and just like everywhere else in the world, there was Harinam on the street, there was book distribution, there was prasadam distribution, and all of that. We were still working out of these small little rented apartments, and then things evolved till about 1987, and we bought a property, and we'll see what that looks like. These are the deities in Gornitai, which we installed then in 1987.
Maybe we should dim the lights.
Or at least that one.
Well,
you can't just do that one, huh? As you like. That's the main one. It needs to be. Anyway, I think everyone can see. So it's kind of a small temple room. It's not very large. Probably about 100 persons fit there. But it suffices for the programs that we have doing. And, you know, as with most temples, things evolved and there were a number of outreach programs. We have a Rath Yatra that happens every Christmas and take Jagannath Baladev Subhadra out for their ride. And at that particular time, it happens on Christmas Eve. And in this particular part of Hong Kong, there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people that congregate. So we're able to take the cart through these hundreds of thousands of people and do kirtan as well as distribute a lot of prasadam and hand out books and so on. Same thing on New Year's Eve, there's a Harinam. It's Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, for those of you who might know him. And those aren't all devotees, but a lot of other people around in the streets at that time. Mm-hmm. Again, packed, thousands and thousands and thousands of people everywhere. We also have a seat at the University of Hong Kong, which was paid for by one of our congregational members about 5 years ago. Wait. Devotees who share in a professorship there. There's a couple of devotees. One is Krishna Shetra Prabhu, who actually schooled around here, right? Didn't he, in Santa Barbara?
Yeah.
And he teaches half the year, and another devotee from Israel teaches the other half. So it's a Department of Culture and Religious Studies, University of Hong Kong. And so we have a number of persons who have gone through that program, and some of them actually become devotees from the program itself. Most of these students are like postgraduate students. Many are from mainland China. And then after we established something in Hong Kong, we went to Taiwan. And this is more recent programs, but a lot of outreach and different yoga programs where we use kirtan. And we found it quite effective. Just very basic introduction, but then let the mantra do the rest. And the people really kind of resonate with the mantra, and they chant quite enthusiastically. A number of persons then buy books and so on and so forth. It's kind of their first introduction. Many of them have never heard the Maha Mantra, never chanted it, and perhaps one of the first times they've actually seen devotees, these ISKCON devotees. Another place. Similar thing. This particular one is one of the largest yoga franchises in Southeast Asia. We held a Gaura Purnima program there. It's not a large temple, but you know, there's a number of enthusiastic devotees, mostly congregation. There's very few full-time staff members. One of the biggest festivals we've had there, it was held in Jamashtami this year, and we had a retreat place which was in the mountains that we rented, and we brought about 100 devotees or so together from around the island. And it was quite a nice program. There was, of course, a lot of kirtan and a lot of enthusiastic dancing. This one devotee here, Indian body devotee, is named Prabhav. He's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, originally from Shantipur. And actually, at the time, I think he was initiated by Srila Prabhupada when he was still in the Gurukul, in the Mayapur Gurukul. So it was in the 70s. So he's quite an amazing, enthusiastic kirtan leader. If you're not dancing, he will definitely get you going, whether you like it or not. He'll really throw you in the middle and get you going. And he has unlimited capacity, unlimited energy. He can dance around all day. That's what he did, hours and hours on end, so it was quite nice. Some devotees getting initiation there. There he is in action. Unless you've experienced it, you can't really understand what it's all about. He has a way of playing the drum and just dancing with it and getting everyone just very enthusiastically involved. They did a really nice play. We were really impressed. Some of the younger Chinese children, they did the Damodar Leela. And, of course, they pre-recorded all the voices and the sound effects and all, but they really did a nice job considering many of them are quite young. It was really well done. This is kind of going, you know, where the demigods reveal themselves. There they are. And they did it. Also, they did a dance. Also, quite well done. This is the Abhishek. So this program was from early in the morning till midnight on the Jamashtami day. So it was quite absorbing for everyone. Some lighting effects there at the at the midnight arti. Yes. There's Prabhav. He's also a wonderful cook. He's a master cook, actually. And he cooked up the feast for the breakfast and also for the next day on Prabhupada's appearance, which is now. This is Krishna Baladev Prabhu, a god brother. He's showing Prabhupada the Vyas Puja book. Another god brother on the right there, his name is Sevananda Prabhu. He came in the 80s to join the China mission. He's been kind of in that area ever since. Probably getting Abhishek. Kirtan. That girl had the tambourine. Amazing, although she's quite young, she has an amazing sense of rhythm, and she's really going to be an excellent musician, kirtan leader in the future for sure. Her whole family's like that, her elder sister and her mother and her father. They're really, really, it's past life, really. It's past life stuff. I mean, right from an early age, immediately able to do these things, so. Kind of a whole spectrum of ages, from young to older. Krishna Baladev Prabhu, that on the right frame there, he's been also with us since the early 80s. He's mid-80s or so, originally from France. And the thing about Tamal Krishna Goswami is quite expert picking up assistants. So Krishna Baladev Prabhu, at the time, he was working with Burijan Prabhu, the VIHE, in Vrindavan. And I think one Kartik, Goswami spoke to him and kind of convinced him without any... any pressure at all. And he came. And he's been around ever since. And it's kind of the end, towards the end of the program. Now we move to China. Now, the thing about China, as I said, that it was... under the communist regime for so long, and it only was in the late 80s that we were able to actually go in. And the way that it all started, hold up there, please. Don't be too enthusiastic. And then, so what happened was, is that at 1988, we were at Mayapur. At the time, the history is that the communist bloc had just fallen. It was about that time. And the then GBC of much of the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, his name was Kirti Rajprabhu. Some of you may know him. He preached more than anything else to Tamal Krishna Goswami. He said that, you should just try something, no harm, nothing venture, nothing gain, just try. And at that time, China was opening up enough that you could go there with a tourist visa. And so what we did was that there was four of us, Tamal Krishna Goswami, myself, and a couple other devotees. And we made a plan. It wasn't much of a plan, really. The plan was just go and chant in the parks. So we went there on a tourist visa just with regular, ordinary attire. And then we got on the other side, we changed into our devotional attire. And the program was that every morning and evening we would go to the parks. Now in China, the interesting thing about the parks is that they're congregated by hundreds and hundreds of people doing exercise, Tai Chi, Qi Kung, this and that. And so they're really highly populated. So we would go there and we sat and we did kirtan. And after a very short while, people would very curiously kind of come up and they would wonder what was going on. They never heard of it. Mind you, at that point, people were still wearing the Mao suits, gray and blue suits. Everyone had the same haircut, more or less. It was starting to change a bit. But everything was very close. And because of the Cultural Revolution, much of what was even ancient Chinese culture, any kind of spirituality, was more or less lost. There was a real spiritual vacuum. So people were looking for something. They didn't really know what it was at the time, perhaps. But they were looking. And so here we were. We came. We chanted Hare Krishna in the park. They surrounded us. And then one of the devotees in the group, he spoke quite fluent Mandarin. So Tamal Krishna Goswami and others would give very brief, simple talks about yoga, placing it as, a science more than a religion, talking about the soul and so on and so forth. It's basics. And immediately they could understand that. They could appreciate that. Because at least whatever values they knew from ancient Chinese culture, some of those values were there. And we got them then to chant, which was interesting in itself, that, they wanted to know what it was, and we explained that this was a mantra and yoga, mantra yoga, kirtan yoga, whatever. And as a result, they wanted to also learn how to chant. So this led to us having competitions where we would try to get whoever in the crowd to chant the loudest, and they would win a prize. Yeah. And the prize was one of Prabhupada's books in Chinese. So as soon as the first book went out, even before it went out, when we tried to give it out, about 100 hands came simultaneously for the book and all but ripped it to shreds. So then we had to start giving out large numbers of books in the parks. Now, we caught everyone off guard. People didn't know who we were, what we were all about, whatever authorities. They didn't know what was going on. So we had a window there of about 6 months where we could do these things. We distributed a lot of books. We chanted a lot of parks. We made some of the first devotees. What happened is, in these programs, like you see Tamal Krishna Goswami on top, this is what is called an English corner. In many of these parks, they congregate to actually learn English. And if they can, converse with a foreigner, a native English speaker, that's a big thing. So we used to stand for hours talking to these people and just, you know, weaving in the philosophy here and there, till we start to get them talking. Because, I mean, they came with the objective to learn English. We came with the objective to teach them Krishna consciousness. So they got a bit of both. And then this led, I don't know if we have photos of that right here, but we then made programs from these connections we made at the English Corner. We meet people, students, different people, and then we would make these different engagements, sometimes in a university classroom or wherever. And we never knew what we were going to walk into. It may have been a few people up to like thousands. I mean, it was what happened. It was amazing in the beginning. And so we walk in and, you know, they were waiting for the foreigner to give their, you know, class on yoga. That's all they knew, the science of yoga. So had a kirtan and then would give them a class, you know, and then there'd be distribution of books. And that became very wild because we had limited books and everyone wanted one. So, I mean, there were situations where we had to kind of fight people away to get a book. I mean, literally holding them, you know, at bay just to make they didn't crush us. Couldn't give up books fast enough. So there was a hunger. There was a spiritual hunger there in the beginning. And this led then to more and more. And the programs had to be modified after a while. But later on, it kind of led to, after the 6 months, had to go back with more of the, you know, conservative clothing, non-devotional clothing, and be a little more low-key. Couldn't do the same things. We had a few run-ins with the authorities, and that led us to understand we couldn't continue like that. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't be able to continue or even stay in the country, perhaps. Now, fast forward. I mean, so after all that time, it was in the late 80s, you know, a lot of preaching was done, and a lot of devotees were made in different cities around the country. As you know, there's like 1.4 billion people in the country itself. So later on, you know, we meet a lot of devotees. And then in a recent tour we did in the spring, we went to four places and we gathered devotees from like nearby cities. So in these programs where we rented halls and things, hotel halls or conference meeting rooms where we had up to maybe a couple hundred or more devotees gathered at one place where we could have the kirtan and katha and prasadam and everything together. Now this is still rare because Krishna consciousness is not in any way endorsed. It's not, we're not registered in any legal way there. They haven't really registered any legal to any religious entity since 1949. It's whatever was there before 1949 is still existing in an official manner. So this is it's still all undercover. We have to take chances and we have to, you know, do what we can without trying to do too much and put everyone in jeopardy. So we were successful in this tour. We had four cities around China, more or less North China, and it allowed the devotees to come together, something that they don't often do, and for this program of concentrated hearing and chanting, which is really, really nice. Managed to do also this kirtan yoga in one of the big yoga studio in Shanghai. It's kind of a mixture of devotees, but also quite a few persons who are just yoga practitioners. And they really warmed up to the kirtan. It was quite nice. They were all chanting and dancing by the end. That was Shanghai. We went to Beijing then. Now, Beijing's interesting because it's perhaps the first place where we got a little bit of encouragement from the government, in which they told us that if you do what you say you will do, I mean, if you keep it on the level of culture, not so much religion, emphasize yoga, health, things like this, then we'll let you do something on a small scale. So they rented a premises, and they have a quite a big kirtan hall. They have an ashram. There's some devotees living there, small little restaurant. And it's been good 8-10 months now. Everything's going quite smooth. And so this is like the kirtan hall where we had an initiation also. But yeah, this was never allowed. This is the first time we've had our own place and been able to do this, where the authorities know what we're doing, but yet they're not interfering in any way. So it's like a pilot project, and if it continues to go the way it is, then we're able to repeat it in various cities around China. Some of that devotee there is Radhacharan Das, disciple of Tamalkrishna Goswami. He's been around here and there. He lives in Beijing now. That's a kind of little restaurant they have.
What style prasad do they?
It's kind of a combination, but mostly Chinese style. Mostly Chinese. This is northeast. It's right up near the border of Russia. Now this, we didn't have a very large premises. There was a devotee actually who owned this. It's a yoga studio, and there's quite a big number there, packed into a smaller area. They couldn't dance hardly, a little bit, not much. It was really packed, and that's where we had programs for 5 days. Devotees coming together for, coming from different cities, surrounding cities. Some having traveled for even days by train. Just to come for the program.
So they're wearing saris there.
They are. They are. And, yeah, you can do that a little bit. I mean, you can do it. It's just, I guess there's a little bit of risk wearing devotional clothing. You know, it's hard to explain that away. You know, otherwise you can say, well, we're singing, we're this, we're that. Even when we were doing this, even though where it was situated, it was kind of an obscure place. But next to it, there was a dance studio. And some persons coming by, they heard the chanting, and then they started in choir. And I don't know if some of you might have heard the Falun Gong. It was a group in China that was persecuted because of their beliefs in yoga and this and that. It was quite a big group. And so they're all but kind of driven out. So then they thought that we were the Falun Gong for a while. And there was kind of a scare for a little while, but nothing came of it. Because the thing is, you never know if someone's going to call the police or anything. And these are the things that always got us in trouble before. A lot of shoes outside, that's a dead giveaway. Or, you know, kirtan, you know, in a rented apartment, you can imagine, you know, it's just people hear kirtan. If you have 20, 30 people in an apartment chanting, it's hard to keep them quiet. So neighbors, and then something, the ominous, you know, knock on the door and some authority or this or that. So rather than that, we opted for this kind of situation. And it was a lot safer. I mean, through the years, we've had so many scares in apartments, authorities coming. Luckily, we've had a couple devotees being blacklisted, deported, and so on. Foreign devotees who were preaching there, and so on. Then the final place that we did was in is way out in the west. It was kind of in the desert region, a smaller number, and this was in a, I think it was a school. It was a school, it was the auditorium of a school. We held the program. Mixed audience, some were actually devotees and some were friends of friends and so on. So it was a lot newer to a lot of these people.
Are they devotees?
Some of them are. No, they're all devotees. Yeah, they're all devotees, actually, in that group. Everyone's devotees. And so then we come to the Philippines. I mean, it's a long, colorful history, but I can spare you a lot of that. This is the... we did a Padyatra. What year was this? 1990? Or something like that? First Padyatra we did there. Tamal Krishna Goswami, his favorite, I think one of his favorite activities is to hand out popcorn, hand out prasadam. He really loved to do that more than anything. So, you know, persons really love to dance and chant there, so, you know, Padyatra was a big thing. We did that many years consecutively and went to every island throughout the Philippines, most of the major cities. Quite nice. And we, one of the programs we had, we kind of adopted was this Kirtan Yoga program. And we've held a number of programs there now on the, with this program. Of course, a lot of these persons never been exposed to kirtan, but most of them, by the end, were dancing and chanting. That's pretty much what happens in every program. It's quite nice. This is a, another program we did, which was like a pre-Janmastami program at the university, big university there.
Philippines is more open than China?
Yes, yes. Yeah, Philippines is totally open for religion and everything, not a problem. Sorry?
Is that a specialty of the Philippines, those cupcakes?
I think that's a specialty of Bharat Prabhu's wife. Intoxicated by the holy name. Now here is Srila Prabhupada's holy name retreat. This was last October 2011. This was special because we brought together, this is also a resort. We rented this large resort, and there were about 500 devotees, and over 350 of them from mainland China, which is a big thing. Yeah. Taiwan, Hong Kong, Philippines, but the majority of the devotees from mainland. A lot of them even newer people, and they were really transformed by that festival. Some people who had, weren't even chanting yet. Who is that? Wow! Saints are everywhere. Now, those deities are almost like life-size. This Nisringadev deity is the same as Ugra Nisringa in Mayapur. A devotee actually carved this deity out of styrofoam. He's a master artist, and every detail, it's exactly, he got the pictures from the Stapati that originally carved the Ugra Nrisimha in Mayapur, and he copied exactly. It says replicated exactly, everything. You remember that darshan, Mark?
Yeah. The whole thing, even the Panchatattva was all...
Yeah, the Panchatattva are like almost, not quite as big, they're like over 5 feet. They're over 5 feet tall. Yes.
Oh my God.
They're stored. They're stored somewhere for the next festival. Chant! So, of course, kirtan was the main thing for this program. So there was hours and hours and hours of kirtan. A lot of dancing, a lot of chanting. A little bit out of control. Sorry? No, we had to translate because of the Chinese devotees. A lot of them didn't speak English. Tulsi Devi. Now look at those deities. Amazing, huh? I mean, you know, when the curtains opened, it was like Mayapur. I mean, I think some had to do a double take, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing, huh?
The deity greeting, just like Mayapur. Unbelievable.
Are they painted gold?
Yeah, they're again trying to get them as close as the original Mayapur. Brass, bronze. Even Lord Nityananda has that kind of copperish appearance, you know, if you know there's difference in them. So he tried to replicate as much as possible. Yeah, the devotee who did this is from the Philippines. Next.
How long did it take to carve it?
Sorry?
Like how long did it take?
It took him, I think it took him about a month or something like that. That's the devotee there, in the left frame. Right? His name is Baladev. Oh. Baladev Das. Oh.
He looks like he
had his hand. So, yeah.
Has he been to Mayapur?
Yeah, several times. Oh. Several times, yeah. He's been to Mayapur several times. So we had classes in the morning, Bhagavatam classes, and we had seminars. Some people got a little wild. But especially the one with the glasses. He was out of control. Our Nam Ruchi Prabhu. Next. There they are. Jnanananda Maharaj, who is originally from England, spends time in that part of the world. Krishna Shetra on the right, Prabhu. Okay. This is kind of, where was this? At the end? Towards the end or something?
Yeah.
We're leaving, I guess. They're going on the bus and leaving the country.
I'm in there.
Are you? Where are you? Oh! It's you! He's everywhere. There he is again. We're saying goodbye to the devotees. Harinam. Yeah, Harinam. This wasn't a huge Harinam, but anyway. It's a good it's a good place for Harinam. I mean, contrast with mainland China, I mean, you know, you're free to do anything you like, so in that respect it's a boon. Those are deities in the Manila temple. Yes, they're not made of styrofoam. No. These are marble deities.
That's the flute. Yeah.
What? The what?
He gave a flute. Remember, I gave you a flute.
Oh.
At the
is that the flute?
Uh-huh.
Amazing.
Oh.
Just see.
That's nice. So far away.
Yeah. Radha Madhava. Okay. And these are the deities who are at the... We have a rural project called Nunavadvitam Eco Village, and right now there are two sets of Gornitai there. On the right are Shishi Nitai Sundar Gornataraj, and the right Shishi Dayal Nitai Gorhari. Eventually, we probably will have one of these sets of deities go to the city when... We've acquired a property, and perhaps when there's a bigger temple or center built, that they might move there. And that's it.
Okay.
Okay. Just 1 second. Marge. So, Marge wants me to say a little bit more. at the end, I mentioned Nunavadvitam Eco Village. And what that is it's a 9-hectare property which we acquired in 2004. And we're actually developing an eco village there. Eco village means working everything, you know, with the ecosystem, with nature and everything. And so far we've gotten the help of a Vastu expert. Vastu, for those of you who don't know, many of you do know, but it's the origin of feng shui. So it's science of directions. And so everything that's going to be on that property, from the temple in the middle to the housing to, you know, whatever, agriculture, all other aspects are being determined by this. So we've made that plan. Hopefully within a year or so, some of the first houses will be erected and first group of devotees will be living on that property. And it's meant to be a kind of an international project, at least for that region. Because as you saw in mainland China, there's some limited facility and opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness. So it's hopefully that this center, this village would be like a regional kind of gathering place for festivals like you saw, as well as for training in different aspects of whether it's deity worship, cooking, or Vaishnava studies or whatever like that. So things are just gradually happening, but it is moving ahead. And hopefully maybe by the next time we'll have some more pictures and good reports about how things are evolving.
Now, is that in the Philippines?
Yes, it is.
Is it going to be like self-sufficient, your water, solar power?
That's the hope, yes. Yeah. That's the hope. We have a stream that runs through the property, so there's a very strong water source. And, you know, the Philippines itself is a very green country, so you can grow anything there. And it's a subtropical climate, so it's a year-round growing season as well. So there's not any problem really to grow anything that we want to grow. So that's going to be a big part of it. Yeah, and the first step is like, you know, what Prabhupada wanted was at least self-sufficient, grow your own food, at least to start with that. And then, you know, kind of evolve from there. So there'll, you know, there'll be a school, there'll be, you know, like I said, there'll be housing. It's also a part is kind of a wellness area, which is kind of for the employment of devotees as well as to attract other persons who, you know, have an interest perhaps in the other physical aspects of yoga or maybe just maybe mantra or whatever. And it'll also offer different wellness therapies, Ayurvedic therapies and things like that. So.
And how many acres is that? Is it hectares?
Or? It's about 25.
Oh, 25 acres.
Yeah. 25. It's about 2 hours from the main city of Manila. Very nice. It's the surrounding is all it's all farmland also. So yeah, it's a really nice piece of property. You have to come and visit us.
Yeah, you know, in my mind I'm going, well, okay, maybe you can sell like little, you know, apartments and raise money like that,
yeah.
And then we can come and stay there. Oh, yeah. I've been a real estate broker for way too long.
It's timeshare, like vacation timeshare, spiritual vacation.
Yeah, okay.
Retreat, you know.
Yeah, and then you can raise money for your project.
And what's your commission?
I used to sell pie share as well, so you can come and sell it out too.
Okay, we'll keep that in mind. I didn't notice. No, I mean, but really, anyway. Actually, what we've done is that at least for the first group of houses, a number of devotees from mainland China have done something similar to this. They've paid like a sum, and then from that, they get like 3 months a year. So it's similar to the India scheme, something like that. So that from that, it enables to build others and so on and so forth. At this point, it doesn't seem to be a problem. It seems like there's more persons who may be interested than we might be able to have housing for. But we'll, you know, we'll see how things go. But we'll definitely keep leave your card, please.
Is the weather like nice year-round there?
It's subtropical. Mm-hmm. It's warm pretty much the year round. You know, subtropics means that there's monsoon rains and typhoons. So that's there. But, you know, a typhoon is nothing like a hurricane or anything like that. You know, the winds aren't that strong. But they can dump a lot of rain. But that's more of a problem in the city, really, than in a rural situation. The cities have problems because they don't have proper drainage and so on and so forth. Otherwise, it's not really that.
You're not near the coast.
No, we're not. Not so near the coast. No. So, I mean, it's really not, that's not a problem. Yeah. That's basically it.
There's also a waterfall.
Oh, waterfall. There's a waterfall. You put that in the brochure also.
Do you raise cows?
Eventually. The thing is, that property's got, it's a little small for that. We in ISKCON have kind of made a few mistakes. It becomes cows. Limited land, and then the herds, you know, expanded and not enough land and so on and so forth. So there's a certain ratio per cow that you need. So I think we're going to need to acquire some more land around, which we can. There's at least three sites that we can acquire more land. When we get more land, then we'll be able to do that. But we're not going to make that mistake of not having enough land for the cows. It's something we definitely want to do. What's a community without a cow? Right? Need a cow. That's our hope anyway. So hope you can all visit us sometime.
Can we donate?
Well, that never occurred to me. But if you would like to, certainly we would definitely appreciate anything that you could do. It would help us, okay. For sure. It goes for everybody. Anybody who would like to, of course. No pressure. You want to ask some questions, Shiba?
In China, why only do 6 months? You said you're allowed to go only 6 months, and then you cannot do preaching more there. Starting.
I think if I mentioned 6 months, that was in the beginning when we initially started 6 months, mm-hmm. like with a devotional attire. Then the government gave us enough heat that we realized that it wasn't a good thing to do. So we had to go back with, you know, non-devotional clothing. So that was the reason for that.
Another question is, what language you talk when you talk to the group? Like, do you speak Mandarin or
English? I speak English, barely, and it's translated into Mandarin. I'm still working on English as my first, my language, personal language. But it's translated into Mandarin. There are so many devotees, you know, who speak fluent English and Mandarin, Chinese devotees. So it's all translated. Some devotees do speak a fair amount of Chinese. Some of the foreign preachers who go there, and they can actually give classes in Chinese things.
Oh, okay.
But majority speak English, and it's translated.
And all the books will be in Chinese.
Yeah. Many of the books, I mean, much of the Bhagavatam and many of the books have been translated into Mandarin already.
So they were never persecuted like in Russia?
Not nearly as much. The most that's happened is there have been a very few devotees, local devotees, who have been jailed. But even then, for a short period of time, it was more like a slap on the wrist, really. Nothing like we've heard about, you know.
And what was their reason for jailing them? What did they say?
You're practicing religion. And that's illegal. Unless it's registered. You know. No, they don't register you, obviously. And the registration process, which was done, again, before 1949, was just for some very, well, the mainstream. There was Christianity, Islam, because in one section of China, in the West, kind of the Northwest, there's Islam. So that was allowed. Christianity was allowed. Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism. That was it. Hinduism wasn't around at that time, or didn't, at least not as we know, you know. So it wasn't there. So nothing after that was allowed, officially. But even so, those things were registered, it's all controlled. It's all controlled by the government. I mean, in other words, they're not allowed to preach, as it were. They can't really preach. They're supposed to have their own places of worship and conduct all their activities inside of those places and so on.
But you were saying there's a big congregation for Christmas, so it's a big thing there?
That was in Hong Kong. Hong Kong Yeah, I can't say that it was for Christmas. I think it's like an opportunity. You know, it's become very commercial, you know, as it is practically everywhere nowadays. So I don't think they even know what they're doing, you know. I think it's... I mean, people are out there and, you know, they're wearing... They started years ago, they started wearing, you know, the Santa's Helper's caps and these kind of things. You know, come into our shop, you know. And
it's all commercialized.
Yeah, it's all commercialized.
Mm-hmm. Going by.
Just going by, yes. That's basically it. There is quite a bit of Christianity due to the influence of the British and so on in Hong Kong, but percentage-wise, I'm not sure. Very materialistic in general. People, especially in Hong Kong. I think it's just a holiday. You know, it's just a holiday. And they, so they have this, you know, they're off work and, you know, they congregate in these places. Just an opportunity for sense gratification, really. Many people are intoxicated. But there's a big, huge concentration of people. So it's a good opportunity to hear and chant. A lot of, you know, people hear the name, they see Lord Jagannath, they get prasad. It's a big opportunity, really. And they like us, for some reason. They like us. They you know, I don't know if they even know what we're doing, but they, you know, they'll wave and they'll dance around and, you know, whatever. They seem to like it.
So is Hong Kong even more open than China?
Yes. Yeah, although it's becoming less so now. And there's if you follow the news, there's been a lot of protests in Hong Kong because of, well, the mainland Chinese kind of taking away certain freedoms, you know, gradually, just taking little here and there, little things. So they're getting upset about that. You know, from the beginning they said it would be, said it was like supposed to be one country, two systems, they said. Hong Kong, after the takeover in 1997 from the British and back to mainland China, they said, well, Hong Kong and China are one, but there's two political systems. Mainland being communist and the other one being some type of democracy, although the chief executive head is appointed by the mainland government. So it's not really an election process. Some of the lower level officials are. But there's no visual, you know, there's no visual change. Everything's, you know, we're still able to do the same things. We can still do the Harinams, do everything we want. There's not really much problem with that. That hasn't changed. We thought it might after the Chinese takeover, but it didn't. So the little things that people themselves are feeling, things with taxes, just different things gradually. But yeah, we can do the same things.
I wish I heard a news story that they were allowing more, like, music concerts in China now. It's starting to be allowed, like pop music, and that has always come in on those concerts at all.
Yeah, I've seen that. But you know, devotees, to my knowledge, have not yet. I don't think.
And I heard the story. I just thought maybe that was an opportunity if they're missing that thing.
It's very gradual, these things, you know. And the thing is it very unpredictable. Because at one point they'll allow, open, and then they close. With no warning, they close.
So in China, did they allow Harinam outside?
No. Right. No, of course not. No, we can't do it. I mean, you can't do anything outside. Nothing. Yeah, just inside, and even then, you can't. There's a law that says no more than 8 people can congregate together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, without written permission, which, of course, you never get. And so then, you know, whatever we do there, whether it's more than eight people in an apartment or whether it's, you know, 200 in a hall, it's all illegal. But, you know, just ways around it, and, you know, they, if you're careful and people kind of turn a blind eye and there's ways around things. That's what you deal with. There's always an element there.
Have you ever had an undercover person attend your big festivals?
There's been, through the years, several persons undercover, yeah, who have come, posed as devotees, things like that, and then something happened. You know, then the police later showed up, you know. And, you know, if they want, they can do anything. I mean, they can tap phones, they can, they're everywhere, you know, if they want to. Just depends how much they want, if they're interested or not. If it suits them. Because you have all levels of you know, these officials and things. So if someone more top level wants, then they'll get you. And if someone more low level, if they don't see the incentive, they don't see they're going to get something out of it, they may not even bother. And then, you know, from Beijing through all the different, provinces and different places, the laws are often interpreted in different ways. You know, they may strictly interpret the law in one way in Beijing, and then somewhere else, they'll do it in a different way. They don't know what, one place doesn't know what the other is doing, oftentimes. So this is what you're dealing with also. It's just so big, the place. It's so huge in terms of land, you know, the land mass and so many people, you know. It's wild. It can be wild. That's what we got to deal with. But, you know, there's a lot of persons who have interest, you know. And, you know, it's, you know, two things. I mean, one thing is the government. It prevents, you know, us from getting to the bigger numbers of people. And then also there's, you know, Western influence, you know, whatever's bad about Western civilization is gradually entering in there. And it's kind of eating away at the moral fiber of people. So that's there also. So when we first went, people were very innocent. I mean, they were so sheltered, which was good and bad simultaneously, but they were sheltered from a lot of, you know, more of the grosser sinful activities. They're actually sheltered from that. And there was a certain amount of piety because of that. You know. So, but now it's changed. Oh, it's changed so much. I mean, I said in the 80s it was the Mao suits and everyone was riding a bicycle. I mean, hardly any cars at that time. Very few cars. Everyone riding a bicycle. But then, you know, now it's like everybody has a car, and the buildings are going up faster than you can imagine everywhere. It's a huge boom, you know. And somehow people have money, and I don't know. But, you know, as they say, it's the bubble's starting to burst now. It's kind of artificial, the whole thing. So we'll see where that leads.
Mm-hmm. And are they pretty much generally striving for materialism, like Western materialism? Is that what they want?
I think so.
Why did you say the bubble is starting to burst?
Because it's kind of an artificial, it's an artificial economy, and it's based on production of certain commodities and things.
Yeah.
And because the West is starting to falter, their market's starting to falter also. So, you know, it's starting to burst now. And then a lot of their economy was prompted up by, you know, loans and this and that. It's like the story of everywhere in the world. It's just the, you know, the cheap labor, the factories and everything. They could do everything, you know, so they had an edge in the market. But now, when your overseas market is starting to, you know, crumble, then everything starts to crumble. So that's what's going on.
It's like another Great Depression.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Krishna's mercy to have the bubble burst so that the whole illusion can dissolve, so that people can get back to basics.
Mm-hmm.